Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Be'ez Hashem Feedback and Insights share number 187. And today, we're going to talk about the dangerous and negative effects of control in life and in marriage. Tversky says a statement in the beginning of his chapter called Control. I don't know of any personality trait as ruinous as control. It causes havoc. He says, I have seen beautiful marriages destroyed by one spouse trying to assert control over the other spouse. And what's worse is that the controller may not even be aware that he or she is controlling. Now, he says that control is not a uniquely human trait. Animals have this as well. Very often, one of a herd may be more powerful and assume a position of leadership and control the rest of the pack. That animalistic trait has no place in a marriage. Tversky thinks that, like most of the time, I'm assuming, that control is a defensive maneuver utilized by people that are suffering from low self-esteem to make themselves feel better about themselves. They want to feel better, they control. Rabbeinu Yoina said that gaiva is a desperate maneuver to overcome feelings of low self-esteem. I have to find the makor where he says that, but he said he found that the Rabbeinu Yoina said this. If you think yourself that you're superior than other people, it soothes you from your pain, from being inadequate, from being unworthy. Now, that's control. Now, he originally thought that lust for power is also a similar defense against low self-esteem, but that's present in animals too. It may be biological, it may not be purely psychological, so he's specific with that. But control is definitely, a lot of times, coming from a lack of self-esteem. Marriage is not the only relationship that is affected by control. You have a parent-child relationship, you have a teacher-student relationship, you have employer-employee relationship. Those relationships are likely to be affected by control. Truth is, in all of those situations, there's a certain degree of control that's necessary. A parent needs to have some control over their small children, a teacher over his students, an employer over his employee pertaining to the work aspects. Otherwise, it won't function. But the idea being is you keep the control to the bare minimum necessary to be effective and healthy in those relationships we just mentioned. Very often, control is based on a fear of reprisal. If you try to control and a relationship is based on control, it will not work because fear and love are not compatible. Control breeds resentment. Control does not breed love. The only relationship where Yira and Ahava go completely together and complement each other is by Hashem, a love of Hashem and an awe of Hashem. Even a fear of certain things like punishment and certain things only applies by Hashem, where your ahava gets increased by the yira and vice versa, where they work together. You can have strong love of Hashem and an awe of Hashem, a strong avas Hashem and yiras Hashem, but in human relationships, the two are opposite like fire and water. If one wishes to be loved, don't try to control. The controller may be in total denial. Just like an alcoholic is in denial of his or her dependence on alcohol, the controller may be in denial that they're controlling. Because exerting control to them may be as vital to them as alcohol is to alcoholic. And people who are being controlled are not able to see this because it may jeopardize their relationship. Sometimes, let's say a husband is tyrannical, terrible with his control over his wife, but his wife will refuse to recognize it because she's dependent on her husband. She doesn't want to rock the boat. But he is controlling. People occupy positions of authority may not realize that they are controllers. Tversky brings a poignant story that he experienced, and he's grateful for a patient that put him in his place this way. He said he was walking once in the corridor of a locked unit in a mental hospital. And he was jingling his keys. He was like jingling his keys out of habit. One patient told him, when he heard the jingling, said like this, you know, you have the keys to your door and I don't. You can leave whenever you wish, and I can't. You can't. You don't have to remind me of that. Now, he had no idea before hearing this that he was being insensitive by his jingling the keys. But really, he was demeaning this person while flaunting his authority. People may use money as a means of control. Parents, for example, that support newlywed children may feel, oh, that gives me a right now to dictate to my children how to lead their lives. Now, certainly parents wish to be loved, and they should be aware that control breeds resentment rather than love. So, for example, if one wants to control a horse, they pull the reins. By a horse, what happens is when you pull the reins, it causes the horse pain, and therefore it turns in order to relieve the pain. Controlling others by intimidation is you're treating them as if they were horses. It won't endear them to you. And it won't endear you to them. Of course, parents need to teach their children proper behavior. But the way Shlomo Wolbo says it in Ali Shor, parents should learn how to discipline a child in a manner that will result in an inner desire to do what is right. Now, he brings a very poignant story that he says, a childhood memory from 80 years later, almost, he has a warm memory from it. And that will tie it into marriage as well. But listen carefully. Very, very poignant story. He says like this: our living quarters were on the second floor, and the first floor was my father's shul. It was in the 1930s. Most of Spalim were first-generation immigrants from Russia and Poland. Several were hucksters who collected paper and scrap metal with their horses and wagon. Late afternoon, they would put the horse in the barn, come to shul for mincha. While waiting for mincha to begin, they would drink hot tea in the kitchen and play chess. At age 6, I watched them play and learned the game quickly. Soon I began beating the older players, and at age 9, I was unbeatable. One Rosh Hashanah, a rabbi from Chicago was our guest. In the afternoon, he invited me to play chess with him. Zoratorsky, as a little child, said, "But it's Yontif," I said. The rabbi assured me that playing chess is not a violation of Yontif. I played him 2 games, and I beat him soundly. Now, the second night of Rosh Hashanah, I was summoned to my father's study. My father was studying a sefer, and I stood there waiting to be recognized. After a few moments, my father looked up from his sefer and said, "You play chess on Rosh Hashanah?" So Rav Tversky answered, "But Rabbi C said it was permissible." My father didn't say a single word. His eyes went back to the sefer. He shook his head ever so slightly, but enough that I should understand that one does not play games on Rosh Hashanah, even if it's technically permissible. Rabbi C was correct that it's not a violation of halacha, but it was not in keeping of the solemn nature of the day of Rosh Hashanah. And even at age 9, I got the message. But I could not leave the room until he dismissed me with a gegesundheit, which means go in good health. He let me absorb the message a few minutes, and then my father looked up from his sefer with a twinkle in his eyes and asked, "Did you beat him?" "Twice," I said. And he nodded with a smile and he said, "Gegesundheit." He says, what an ingenious method of parenting. Now, he had to discipline me and let me know I had done wrong, but he was not going to allow me to leave the room feeling badly about myself. This is the trick of good parenting. Children must be corrected when they do something wrong, but they must not be made to feel bad. And over the last 78 years, I have never played a permissible game on Shabbos or Yontif, but I was not made to feel guilty. Not too many people have warm, pleasant memories about being disciplined, and I was very fortunate. So you see from here how careful you have to be pertaining to this, and especially in a marriage relationship. You're supposed to be two adults working together, and very often one of them plays in a certain way the role of a parent, and the other one the role of a child. And this ordering around, or even in a subtle way, telling them what to do and being controlling, it never, ever ends well. It always breeds resentment. When we say, like before Erev Shabbos, 3 things you have to say b'nichusa with a calm voice, with a pleasantness. You know, Yisartem, Yiraftem, Adlikus, Aner. things before Erev Shabbos, you tell your wife in a pleasant way, in a pleasant way, in a respectful way. This is very, very important. It's different even than a parent-child, teacher-student, employer-employee, a marriage relationship is different. Even then, as we said in this shiur, you have to be careful before exercising control, and you do it minimally enough that it's effective and necessary, and not more. In a marriage relationship, it needs to be a lot subtler. It needs to be without manipulation, with a treatment of each other with great respect and dignity, and requests and politeness and calmness, never in the form of unhealthy control. Bracha v'atzlacha.